It's lonely out tonight, and the feeling just got right for a brand new love song. Somebody done somebody wrong song. Hey, won't you play another somebody done somebody wrong song and make me feel at home while I miss my baby, while I miss my baby. So play, play for me
just feel it.
A sad melody.
The thing is, you fall under his spell. See, Randy's blind, and it somehow he convinces you that you need to feel him. Like, you know, I can see, but I, you know, it gets lost somewhere, and next thing you know, you're just like touching all over him, and then you feel kind of creepy later, and it gets like that scene in Vulgar, and the phone rings, you get a job, and it just, everything's...
You get a job! All that... That Randy.
Yeah, that one. Yeah, I know.
Machi Machi.
It's amazing how far a fry cook from Poughkeepsie can get in this world when they're completely blind and willing to do anything.
Well, you know, and the funny thing is his catchphrase is, which he claims was stolen from him, was "You'll never see me coming." And it just, you get caught up in the spell of it all. You don't realize that you've been had, you know?
Justice is blind. Like, just all of them. Anything you've ever heard is, Randy uses. And nobody questions him because he's blind. I mean...
Yeah, because what are you going to do?
Nobody's
gonna
a dick.
You're that guy?
Yeah. Right. Nobody wants to be a dick. Like, all right, Randy. Stupid Randy. All right, I don't think we can get any more warmed up than that.
I think we're good.
I think we're pretty well ready to go. So, all right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Hey Kids Comics. I'm Andrew Farmer, your host. With me, as always, is the Jedi Cole Houston.
I am indeed.
Off the top, let us apologize. It's been a while since we've put out a show. I will tell you, we've been besieged by technical issues and things coming up that we can't avoid, but we are truly sorry. And to make it up to you,
especially mid arc, not even mid arc, we're
right. We have
barely into the arc right now.
Whenever Cole and I talk to budding podcasters, we always say you aren't a podcaster until you've experienced your first lost episode, because there's very little in our world that's more frustrating than putting the time and the effort and bringing the pieces together and getting lovely people like the guests that we have on tonight onto a show, sit and record for an hour and a half, and it's a great time, but you have a product that is no longer there. It just ghosts on you. It's like an EVP. Now, what an EVP is... No, I'm not going to... I've by the way, I've coined... have you heard the term mansplaining?
No, I have not.
Mansplaining.
I've heard manscaping.
Yeah, manscaping is my Viking name, by the way.
Manshitsu.
Manscaping is my Viking name now. That's what I go by. Eric Manscaping. But with a K, because it's...
Yes, well, yeah, because it's Scandinavian.
Because it's Scandinavian. But mansplaining is where you would speak down to somebody of the opposite sex when explaining something to them as if they didn't understand it. So you would mansplain to them. Well, I coined a term today called ghost-splaining. It's what every ghost show does to you every time they say a word that they think you might need to hear.
Yeah. So they have to sort of patronizingly impart to you what it is this equipment is that's so vital to their work.
Sure, I mean, you've
and why it does what it does according to them.
Right, right, and it happens every time they say it. So that's ghost-splaining. If you want more information on my love-hate relationship and also the lady Catherine Houston's love-hate relationship with ghost shows, there's a lovely episode of the United States of Geekdom, I think, where we get into that, if you can go back and find somewhere.
Indeed. I'll see if I can dig that one up.
Yeah, it's classic. Why are people so mean to ghosts on those shows? It's just yelling at them. Just, can't you just be nice?
I think it's because it's the last hurdle in civil rights.
Ghost rights.
Yeah, the rights of the dead or the recently
Not to get too topical, but where's my ghost bathroom? I want man, woman, transgender, and ghost bathroom.
Well, especially for those of us who identify as...
I identify ghosts. As Phantom. And by Phantom, I mean I identify as Billy Zane from the movie Phantom.
Oh, okay. I thought maybe you meant like a free-roaming vapor.
All right. Anyway, so we lost an episode here of our story arc, but we are back to re-record it again, and we brought back a lovely guest who managed to sit with us for the entire time and not run screaming into the night.
I don't want to look at it like we lost an episode so much as we gained a guest.
We
already had for the episode we
right.
lost, so that's where that all fell apart.
I think that's called breaking even, but I'm not real
sure.
You're
right.
But we are very lucky tonight to have the lovely, the talented, honestly, probably the best person I've ever met in my life. Now that, you know, this is the second time in hearing his stories for the first time. I don't know how he does it, but I want to study under him on a mountain somewhere, possibly in the Himalayas. The lovely, the talented Thomas Branch is here. Artist, costume designer, unbeknownst to him. We'll hear about that later. And just all-around amazing dude. So thank you for joining us, Thomas. It's greatly appreciated.
Oh, no problem, guys. No problem at all.
Now you got to live up to that.
Thank you for joining us a second time.
So you're right.
We're talking about exactly the same thing in a new way.
It'll be like deja vu, but new.
Deja new.
By way of example, the first time we recorded this, there was not a long apology for having lost it in the first place.
Well, actually, what I did was found the old episode, and just to make it look like we lost it, to add drama, I just cut in a really long apology at the beginning.
Oh, okay.
So now on to the original
actually
show.
Recorded.
That makes so much sense now. It's like Lost, but not Lost.
There is no smoke monster, but there is a polar bear. Enjoy. All right, so you've heard story arc issues about litigation, about the litigation culture in comics. You've heard story arc issues about literal theft of physical comic books, including the theft of Nick Cage's seminal issues of Superman, Batman, and I believe Spider-Man was in there too, but that's Nick Cage, so it just could have been a Betty Crocker cookbook for all we know that he claimed was a comic book. But tonight,
delicious.
But tonight we get a little more personal. Tonight we talk about an issue when it comes to real life comic book capers that's near and dear to our heart. Cole, why don't you talk about what we titled this one and why?
This is, of course, Comic Book Capers. This is our latest chapter, which is The Copyists.
Right.
And the idea is not some monks up in a, you know, cloistered away in an abbey copying ancient tomes for the libraries of the ultra-rich in Venice and Flanders. No, this is about people who take it upon themselves to present themselves as artists, especially at conventions. This is a, you know, fairly recent phenomenon that, at least in so much as it's been getting a lot more attention lately, and that is those who either directly copy existing work, like they go find images on the internet and dope them up and have them printed out and go to conventions and sell them for $10 a pop, and people come over and gush over them and pay their money, and I suspect they probably even autograph them as if it was their work. Or those who, are so in need of artistic expression that they will disappear the signature of an actual artist from their work from sites like DeviantArt, and then post it online with their signature in its place, oftentimes with artifacts of the original signature still visible.
Right.
And there was a big example of that about a year or so ago, affecting a friend of ours. And then those who just sort of... I think there's a prevailing sense that if it's on the internet, it must be public domain. And I think it's just sort of an unfortunate byproduct of the internet age. People think if it's out there, it's free. And it's free to use for whatever purpose you may have. And, you know, I saw that borne out years ago. This guy at comic conventions used to sell these CDs he would burn that had all kinds of, you know, YouTube videos and, fonts that were Star Wars or Star Trek based or all kinds of other junk. And he was making a fortune. But it was all stuff that was taken from the internet, none of which was licensed or owned by him.
Right.
And I was always dubious about that. But it's that in a little bit different way here.
Right. Now, we are, like I said, we are blessed because not only do we have Thomas's brilliance on all things art and the business, but he's willing to talk about this struck home, like Cole said, with a friend of ours, but it's also struck home with Thomas. And he's been gracious enough to join us on the show to talk about this. Thomas, how does this play out? Because you see it way more than we do. How does this play out within that community, within the artist community? Like, how do you see it play out?
Well, when it comes to things like that, the artist community usually rallies around itself and tries to put spotlight on people who steal or are using augmenting licensed product and whatnot. And it really, it really comes down to like the show promoters, if they're willing to stand on the side of the artists or on the side of, I don't know, making money.
Right.
So it's really hard. I mean, it's hard to vet. As much as people argue it, it's very hard to vet shows because, you have places like ACON, which is one of the longest running, anime conventions in the United States. Supposedly, to apply it on Artist Alley there, they have a vetting committee that will either thumbs up or thumbs down. But, systems like that are built to be rigged because if you know people who work that
yeah.
said convention, yes. I mean, you could easily, sway opinion to your favor. So it's tough. I mean, it really is. I mean, you take the old saying of, it's the 10% that ruins it all for everybody, and it's becoming more and more prevalent nowadays.
So let's say you make something. You draw something. You ink it. You pencil it. You color it, and you upload it. How are people getting a hold of that? And I guess, and then making it their own. But I guess the flip side of that is, the more I think about this, is we live in a society now where I think Cole and I both are slowly just, we're going to be on a stoop somewhere yelling at birds before
yeah.
too long. Just you're down
your damn iPod, you stupid bird.
Right. That's what we're becoming. But
Sparrow, it doesn't have an. Okay.
But we live in an entitlement age, and in some respects, that's okay. But in some respects, it's not. And I'm wondering how much of... Do people know that this is the wrong thing to do? I mean, obviously, if you're cutting off people's signatures and putting your own on there, that's a telltale sign that something's up. But, there are a lot of instances where that isn't happening. People are just, they'll print something up on a print, take it somewhere and sell it. Do people know that they're doing something wrong for the most part, do you think?
I don't think so. I think the average fan isn't privy to the situation at hand. They see something that's really cool, something that's, not something that you can't buy at Target or Walmart, easily by itself. And, and they'll leap to that, not knowing, the proper questions to ask or not to, even ask the question, because it's easy for me to go up to a table and say, "Hey, are you the artist of this?" And just go, "Yeah, sure." I mean,
exactly.
Who's gonna debate you on that? You're gonna have someone go, "Nuh-uh," get one of those America's Got Talent X buzzards and be like, "No, you're not. You're stealing."
Yeah, and I think that the real problem there is that very thing you mentioned is your average person going to the convention and perusing the Artist Alley tables isn't going to, there's this presupposition that everyone there, the art behind them and in front of them is their own work. They may
right.
not, have licensed the rights to the characters to mass produce it and sell it, but, you imagine that person, that they are the actual artist. They're in an Artist Alley, after all, so they must actually be artists. And so they go and they see these works, and most people don't look at them with an eye that scrutinizes like in the case of one particular art theft we're going to talk about a little later. most people don't recognize the fact that the style changes drastically,
right,
for some of these types.
Right.
But they're not going to make the connection that this is just somebody trying to make a quick buck.
Right.
And frankly, if the people who are doing this, by and large, I think know they're doing wrong, even if they delude themselves otherwise, that, you know, taking something that exists already and putting a wash over it with a computer that's doing that for you, you know, without you even having to know how to make that happen,
right,
does not make you an artist by any means.
And, well, and you know, the thing about some of that is that you'll see some people who travel far away. They like live in, I don't know, Chicago, and they'll go to these shows in Florida where, you know, people have no clue who they are type situation. So that, you know, if they were busted in Chicago, they might not be busted in Florida.
Right. And the other, I think the other really important thing to mention here is most people aren't like us, you know, as, you know, podcast creators, but not necessarily, you know, art creators. We still go to a menagerie of shows. You know, Cole goes to way more than I do. I'm guessing Thomas goes to more than Cole in a professional capacity.
Yes.
But I have plenty of friends that might go to one or two shows a year. You know, they'll go to a couple big shows, and they aren't in this fraternity, this sorority, that we're in. So they don't understand. They don't even know that there are questions that maybe should be asked. They see cool art. They buy cool art. They don't ask the questions. I think that the people who are doing this in a malicious fashion, the people who are removing signatures, the people who have stolen the art from, let's say, Chris Fulton, who we'll talk about, and from Thomas, they're preying on those people way more than they're preying on anyone else. And that's sad. That's sad.
Yeah. And you know, in the end, it's really the true creators that suffer the most, because, you know, you get stuff stolen or you know, take, for example, a comic book artist. A comic book artist can get, if you're really a top-tier comic book artist, you get, you know, several hundred dollars per page on a comic. That's 20 pages. You might be able to squeeze out $1,000 for a cover. You know, from my understanding, Adam Hughes makes like $3,000 per cover. That's because he's Adam Hughes,
right?
But right, and you know,
anything less would be inexcusable,
right? And then you're doing one book, and it's a couple hundred bucks per page, and in the end, you're doing 20 pages, so you've got about, you know, $3,000 or $4,000 a month. You know, he or she is just like anybody else. They've got expenses to pay. They got mortgages to pay. They got cars to pay. They got food to pay, get. You know, and then, you know, they're trying to sell original artwork or some of their original pages. You know, $200-$400. You know, especially if it's a popular book and stuff like this. Some jackhole, you know, is down Artist Alley, you know, selling Xerox copies of this for, you know, $5.
Right.
You know, totally undercutting the guy. It's
exactly.
It's too bad.
Well, it should be noted that Adam Hughes doesn't get out of bed for under $3,000 for a cover. That doesn't mean that he won't do it. That just means he's not going to get out of bed. He's going to do it from bed. Just understand that. He'll do an in-bed cover for $2,000. So if you need him,
well,
that's,
know,
the going rate.
Interesting story about Adam Hughes is that...
I love you, Thomas.
He stopped doing... Thank you. He stopped doing in-show sketches because they kept on jumping... They kept on going to eBay.
Really?
Just jumping and jumping. Like the turnaround was not like, was under an hour.
Holy cow.
Like the person got it and threw it up on eBay. So what he and his wife does now is they do an eBay of themselves for one commission, sometimes maybe two commissions for the show. And he pulls, you know, $2,000 to $3,000 per convention sketch of one of two. And that's it. That's all I do. All he does is the rest of it. He just signs books and
see, that's an example of one of the ways that the convention dynamic changed very drastically with the advent of eBay. I couldn't tell you how many conventions I attended in my youth where you would go and, you know, they'd have one or two celebrity guests, and you would go, and they would sign an autograph or two. You know, someone had limits just because otherwise people would go nuts and, you know, bring 60 things for them to sign or something. So, but, you know, you'd have, like, say, you know, five-item limit or something like that. But everything, when the celebrity was paid to be at the show, they got paid a fee, and they were at the show for the duration of their contract and signed autographs for whatever the prescribed time was. Then eBay hoves into view, and what you get is the advent of celebrities charging for their autograph, because suddenly autographs were no longer something that, you know, you sought out for yourself. They were commodities.
Right.
And depending on the celebrity, suddenly them signing their name had value added, and they weren't getting a piece of that.
Right.
And that's where that came from. And it got to the point now where a lot of comic creators are charging for their autograph.
Mm-hmm, for sure.
Because it's got just that bad.
Well, and, I think...
So I can certainly see where that would come from, because, you know, you're basically charging a small fee to allow someone else to make a lot of a much larger quantity of money off the work that you did for what in the past would have been something someone invested in for themselves.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, I think Jimmy Palmiotti put it best. He said the reason why they started charging, and they used to do optional. They used to do free. They'd sign anything you want to, but they always had like a Heroes Initiative cup nearby.
Yeah.
And they're such a popular draw because they like talking to their fans. They like, you know, Jimmy puts a chair in front of his table and he says, sit down, let's talk. Mm. And, you know, it got to the point where they were being invited to every show under the sun. Well, the thing is that it's great that, you know, cons are willing to pick up the tab on like most of that stuff, fly them out, put them up, give them some food, whatever. But they're losing 3 to 4 days of work.
Yes.
You know, to do this. And it's like, you know, you're losing prime drawing time, prime writing time, you know, maybe not so much writing. I mean, writers need their, you know, their times too, but I mean, I think it's a little easier on, I guess it might be easier on writers because writing is a little bit more mobile than drawing, but I mean, hell.
It's easier to like kind of even use a dictaphone or something. You can't really like dictadraw.
Well, oh, well, you know,
I just coined a new term.
You did. <Right. laughs>
Could be taken a number of different ways.
Well, let me tell you this. I was privileged enough to be part of the DC Roadshow when it came through Dallas when they were promoting Rebirth coming this fall or shoot next week. Jim Lee was there, and he made no qualms about it. He cut out early because he had Suicide Squad pages he had to do.
Yeah.
Like, I got to go. I got pages to do because I got to be in Florida tomorrow. So it's like, yeah, you got pages to do, buddy. So, I mean, that's the thing is that the more that people put on their plate, you know, it's going to affect, you know, their life considerably.
Yeah, and it's not like the media guests necessarily who, you know, have the option to bail if work, you know, work within their, you know, movies or television or whatever they're doing comes along. The comic artist tends to have to rely on the work at hand and keep after it on a constant.
Yes, absolutely.
Thomas, is it okay if we get into your story now so we can kind of give a point by point of how this happens and how it affects people? Because your story is interesting, and it's a little different than the average story. It's compelling, to say the least. More compelling than I knew going into having you as a guest on the show. But is that something that's okay to talk about?
Oh, yeah, sure. We can talk about it.
Okay.
Well, I do want to point out that to kind of lead into this, I just saw on Facebook a little bit ago, Thomas had put up an image that was... yourself flanked by about 8 images of some of your work, like, you
yes.
know, details of some of the work cropped from the original. And I've actually taken that and replaced your picture in the center with my own.
There you go.
And that's going to become my new Facebook icon. And that statement will make a lot of sense as we get into this.
Well, that's funny because what I did was I just took all of the images of his art and just replaced myself as George Washington crossing the Delaware in every one. So now it's just Thomas standing with a bunch of pictures that he drew of me. And it really makes me feel good when I think about it. And I think that's what it comes down to.
It makes you feel better when you look at it.
Why wouldn't it?
When I eat it with my eye mouth, it makes me feel better. That's what I'm saying.
Well, it also makes it look like, you know, Thomas's style got photorealistic just on your face.
Just on my face, though.
The rest of it looks like his heart. But when he concentrates so heavily on your face that...
There's certain things about Thomas and I's relationship that you just don't understand.
I understand now.
You should understand.
Let's hear the story we can tell.
That's right. So what happened to you, my friend? What? Show me on the DeviantArt where the bad man touched you.
Oh, no, and that's exactly where the story starts, is on DeviantArt. And I have an account, probably millions of people on DeviantArt. And I was nice enough, I was fortunate enough that I have a fan that called out to me and said, hey, this guy is selling cosplay outfits out of one of your designs. So it happened to be my redesign of Cassandra Cain from DC Comics. And I was like, oh, really? And went to his site, and this guy, he sells cosplay outfits, like out of the Under Armour, you know, the sweat repellent clothing type situations. But he had like all the different game skins from all the Arkham games, or he was getting into Power Ranger stuff. And, you know, all these characters, and then my one lone Cassandra Cain drawing on
a
page.
Yeah, so essentially you're looking at someone who is establishing a business selling unlicensed costumes. So it's not like these guys who are mass producing this stuff for Spirit and Halloween.com, the pop-ups every year, or for the Walmart and what have you, but... And sourcing the designs from which he is working to create these costumes from obvious popular sources like those games, you know, who wouldn't want to have the Batman that looks like any one of those given Batmans, of which I have zero frame of reference, but I'm sure they are distinct.
Yes.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, and you know, it's like the animated series version, or the Batman Beyond version, or the, you know, the Arkham version, the 1960s version. Yeah,
so
you know,
well,
they had
imagine,
all
somebody like that sort of perusing the internet, looking for those really cool designs that will catch people's attention.
Absolutely, and you know, and there's very little female costumes out there. You know, I made the joke
that... Hey, there's
that,
Slave Leia, and that's pretty good.
There's Slave Leia, there's also Slave Leia.
Yeah.
There's Slave Leia, there's like Black Widow now.
There you go.
There's Black Widow now.
we're really pushing for those rights. Black Widow now, Slave Leia for the past 30 years, and that's what you got.
It's called progression, sir.
I'm sorry, we're... Moving on up.
It's not progress. It's just called progression. But anyway, please go on.
So the guy had a picture of my design on the page, but he was nice enough to crop out my signature and only focus on the outfit itself.
Well, he didn't want to pull a focus away. Yeah, he wanted to keep the... What a dick. Sorry, keep going.
No, the thing about it is, that's a good example of what we were talking about earlier, that your average person isn't going to know. You know, they encounter that design, they might not recognize, you know, I don't remember ever seeing that in a DC comic, that particular design. They may know the character, but they think, wow, that's a great take on that. I don't remember that one. It's probably from one of those damned annuals I refuse to buy or something like that. And they're not going to know to question the sourcing on that, or if they recognize that it is an original design, and you know, someone else's take that has never been seen by comic book audiences, the natural assumption, I think, of people is, oh, this guy who's making these costumes, that's his original design. And by disappearing the signature, would certainly underscore that, whether that was by accident or design, that you know, whether it was just trying to crop it to fit just right, or, you know, whether it was very deliberate to make it, to sort of claim ownership in a way.
Well, I think the real special part of this, and if you listen to the first two, I'm going to continue to get progressively angrier through the issues of the story arc, because it was a great choice for a story arc, but a bad personal choice for me, because the more research I do on this shit, the madder I get, just the more angry. But the real special part of this isn't that, you know, this isn't the guy that you see on DeviantArt that obviously steals something and then goes in to put the caption at the bottom like, hey guys, I really appreciate all your support. I'm really working on my lines. My line work's getting stronger. I've changed my style up a little bit. Tell me what you think. Like, this isn't that guy.
Your style looks an awful lot like Jim Lee all of a sudden.
Right. This is somebody who not only took your art, then took that a step further by taking your art and then making it a physical costume for people to wear without ever telling you. Is that correct?
That's about right.
God, I mean, son of a bitch.
And the thing is, you know, he was selling these outfits for like $150. You know, I mean, good for him. He's making a ton of cash off of this, I guess. But I'm not getting any of that. And you know, you hear the stories, and then it happens to you, and then you're just confused by it. I mean, I know I was. I mean, I reached out into the ether and asked my fans and some other friends what I should do. And, you know, and they're basically like, look, you need to be really professional about this. You know, you hit them up with an email and say, look, you know, I've seen this. I've been notified of this. And you need to, you know, please stop. You never asked my permission and whatnot. And I did that. And I, you know, and I sat on it.
I think I was the only one who said, just burn him down.
Right.
Just go in and make it happen.
Right. Well, you know, and I responded to him, and I emailed him, and then he responded back, and he claims that he attempted to get a hold of me, and that he would be more than willing to pay $20 for the right to use my thing, to use my art.
Does he think you're like Will Wheaton or something?
Right. And you know, and when it was all said and done, the thing about the issue was that he attempted to get a hold of me, he didn't get a hold of me, and he still stole it.
Right.
Yeah.
So I sat on the idea, and I thought about it, and I finally went back to him and said, look, even if you tried to get a hold of me, you didn't get a hold of me, and then you thought it was okay to go ahead and take.
Yeah, and I think that's a really important point there. The sort of dismissing of responsibility has. I tried to get a hold of you. Well, at what point does you know?
Well, it's
like you say, if you attempt and you're unsuccessful, that doesn't give you carte blanche to then go ahead and go forth anyway.
It's like calling somebody and hanging up instead of leaving a voicemail and saying, look, I tried to get a hold of you. Your house was on fire.
Yeah.
It was like, you could have left a message and said my house was on fire.
Exactly.
I tried.
There's no, I think the point is that there's no statute of limitation on stealing somebody's stuff.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
You can't be like, oh, well, I wrote DC a letter saying that I was going to make a book called Batman. And then I waited like a month. And I never got a response from them, so I went ahead and made a book like Batman. They don't have a right to be mad at me for this. Like, what? Like, it's insane. Was the guy Donald Trump? Was the owner of this website actually Donald Trump? Because he's real good at business, so it strikes me as something that he might have done.
Or he might have been Donald Trump impersonating someone impersonating him.
That's right. That's right.
So apparently he does that as well.
So this guy... said, okay, so the chain of events now is that you've reached out to this guy, and you've said, hey, you know, and he said, well, I tried to get a hold of you, but you never wrote back. Oh, Jimmy Two Balls is going to take your stuff. So what do you do then?
Well, you know, I responded to him, and you know, he, I mean, he was nice enough, and he took it down for a while. he killed the link. He pulled it off the page, but he wouldn't think that I wouldn't go every so often check up on him. But it's true that the page is dead, but you can still get to the page, if that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah.
Like I saved the actual link to it, and it's still active. Now, he's taken off my artwork, but the images are still there. Mm-hmm. So it's like, okay, I guess. you theoretically think that, you know, he's just keeping the page for archive purposes. But, you know, anybody can say, hey, you know, I saw that Batgirl, whatever, piece you selling. He goes, no, you can look at this link, and you can do whatever you want to, and stuff like this. But, you know, as far as I know, he hasn't read it. I mean, the funny thing is that he did try to friend me on LinkedIn.
Still funny. It's still the best part of the story. It's like, hey, been my friend on LinkedIn, you know, write me a good letter of recommendation.
That's right.
Right.
Would you mind, like, directing people to my site from yours?
So did you ever get paid for this? Is this something that you ever got satisfaction for?
No, I didn't get anything from this. Satisfaction to shut him down, that's about it. I mean, that's about as good as it's gonna get.
Yeah.
And I'm okay with that. I mean, it's still, in my mind, it's still kind of a win.
I mean, did anything good come of this for you? Like, is there a silver lining on this cloud? Because, I mean, it has to have an effect, right? Like you're bopping along, doing amazing art, which if you haven't seen it, we're going to plug it and put it on the website for you to find it. But it's amazing. Like, I bask in the glow of the Thomas Branch Batgirl every day because it's astoundingly great. But have you... did anything good? Because you're, like I said, you're just going along making amazing art, making people happy, you know, giving them joy in their life, and then all of a sudden this gremlin pops out from under a bridge and screws up your whole day. Did anything good come out of this for you?
No, I mean, it was just kind of like, when it was all said and done, it was
kind of
like...
Hey, got you on the show.
That's right.
That's what we were
on the show.
Three years of us being friends and knowing each other, and this is what got you on the show. That's sad. We are remiss.
That should tell you something about what assholes we are.
We are the worst. We are the worst. But no, here's another, I guess I'll frame it another way. Did it change the way that you do things? Did it change the way you present art or make available what you have?
Absolutely. I mean, I started to integrate my signature. Well, you know, I do a digital signature on my pieces, you know, kind of like a watermark, but not really. But I've been integrating it a little bit better because, you know, when I first started out, I used very simple backgrounds, simple colors. I've you know, gotten more complicated in my design work and my not only in the art, but like in the background and stuff like this. So now when I integrate my signatures, it's very hard, in my opinion, to Photoshop that out or trim that out, because it's sometimes actually in the image, it's actually in the person, it's around them, it's in the line work. So it's very hard to work that out without, you know, really gutting, you know, a chunk of the image.
Sure. Might have to take it out. Missing piece there that says it
right,
all.
Where it just looks, very awkward, and it's like, why is this missing? Why is there a big black square in the middle of your piece? And
where your signature is. Why did you feel like you had to black out a part of the image to sign your own work?
Right.
Telling.
Because assholes. That's why. Sorry.
Go
ahead.
When you're attempting, though, you know, we spoke earlier about the copyists who, you know, take other people's work and then sell it at shows, and it happens a lot. And if I'm not mistaken, there was somewhere in the back of my mind, I think there was a case where someone was stealing someone else's art, and then to, I guess, try to throw people off the scent, they tried to present the very person they were stealing from as the art thief.
Like they were stealing their art?
Yeah, they accused that person of stealing their art, and then, you know, it came down to the burden of proof was impossible for them to...
the old Toledo flip-flop.
Yeah.
So that's what we call it.
It turned out Slippin' Jimmy wasn't as slick as he thought he was.
That's right.
They're kind of was discovered, which, you know, if your idea was to somehow perpetuate, you picked a bad way to do that, you know, to try to hide in plain sight or something. But, the thing about it is, I would recommend to people, if you suspect this sort of thing, ask the people if they do commissions.
Nice. Yeah,
because
that's good. Because
a genuine artist like Thomas or Eddie or Bobby, you know, say, you know, even something simple like a sketch card, how long could that possibly take the busy artist who has time to sell their wares at this show, you know? And if they're balking at that, or they can't show you the original art, or, you know, anything, if they can't back up what they have hanging behind them in some capacity, I'd wager to say, you know, as much as, I wouldn't go so far as say 100% of the time that they're faking it, because I don't expect everybody's necessarily prepared for this, but I think that that's a good way to root these people out. And, you know, if you get anything from admission to short of an admission, bring it to the attention of the show promoters. You know, having put together shows myself, I'd hate to lose a table space to somebody, but you can always gain it from somebody legitimate. I'm sure there are a lot of artists who miss out on some shows because there just weren't enough artist tables.
Right.
Sure.
And if they're losing a chance to sell their work that they've actually put some effort into and creativity into to some hack who can, you know, can knows how to use Photoshop, there's a, you know, it, we need to take a more active role, I think, as fans in not allowing this sort of thing to perpetuate, because when it does perpetuate, there's kind of built-in encouragement.
Right, right. Well, also, there's one thing that I stumbled upon that hadn't occurred to me the last time that we were discussing this, was the reverse effect. So we have cases like Thomas's, where somebody steals his art, claims it's their own, and attempts to sell it. Well, in the last week, we lost a luminary in the business, and somebody who was very well respected in Darwin Cook. Less than 3 days from the announcement of his death, stories started popping up online about somebody who was selling art on eBay, claiming it was his, and it wasn't. So, and actually, what ended up happening was, Darwin Cook's widow actually contacted the person saying, "This is not my husband's art." Sold anyway. It sold for $382.
Oh my.
Yeah. But that's the opposite. Like, you want to talk about the real copyists? It's the people who it's the people who would say there was a piece of art. Thomas, you were saying that there was an art piece that you did for The Force Awakens that went up at Heritage Auction House, wasn't it?
Yeah, it went up to... I did one for the Texas Theater for the premiere night, and someone bought one and consigned it through Heritage, where I work at, and it went for, like, over $200.
Yeah, and the ironic thing was that was a print. It wasn't the original art, and it was the print that was sold for, what, $20?
Yeah, it was either $30. Yeah,
or $30. Okay, yeah. So if you bought it like at the Texas Theater, it would cost you $30. Obviously, someone did, and then commissioned it to Heritage, and it that's another product of the weird way that the internet culture is. That
right.
You know, the things that if you're not aware of them, might seem like more than what they really are. You know, you know, it's funny you bring up the Darwin Cook story, because it does create a possibility, because as soon as someone dies and everybody's immediately looking for the last chance to get their stuff or what have you, and for someone to, like, take either their work or some work they have that looks enough like it could pass for his work.
Right.
And then, you know, basically steal their name, not their art.
Right.
And another case that we mentioned at the top of the show was... that of Chris Fulton, another friend of the show, who I've known Chris for many, many years. He would done a lot of artwork, did some stuff for a comic shop in the area where he lived at the time, and had done some messing around with art. And I kind of got him involved in a little mini comic we were trying to put together, which was just a blast to work with him. And that got him really seriously interested in pursuing more with his art. And he, you know, did the Joe Kubert correspondence thing. And it was amazing to see how his pencil work changed. It was always good, but he learned how to, one of the hardest things when we were doing the mini comic was for him to draw on that smallest scale, to do like little bitty panels when he was used to doing his work in massive scale. And his art overall changed, became even better. And then he started selling at shows, selling prints of his original art. And it's been fun to watch that evolve. And then, what, it was about a year or so ago,
yeah,
there was a case where, what is it like? It was on DeviantArt, was where it was outlined, where this guy was putting forth the work of a lot of different artists, both, you know, industry professionals, fan artists, people whose work was mainly seen on DeviantArt, people who sell at shows and stuff, with, you know, just willy-nilly, you know, anywhere. If it was out there, he was co-opting it.
Right.
And had a web page showing off, you know, here's my work, and, you know, I had to work really hard on this one and stuff like that, from what I recall.
Liam York, yeah.
Liam York, yeah, that was his name, was Liam York. And somebody, you know, he ran afoul of a lot of people as a result of that. And he was, Chris Fulton did a whole expose on DeviantArt about this guy. And I did notice when we first tried to record the show, I went back and was looking at the posts on that. And York himself had actually posted an apology,
yeah.
Which I have to applaud Chris for being goodly enough to just leave it there. You know, when somebody slights you, the easiest thing to do is if they try to make a public apology, it's like, I'm not going to give you that.
Sure.
But I have to say it was very big of him to let that stand, because it is a piece of the story, it's a piece of the history. And, you know, that the guy came clean doesn't excuse him of what he did, because he wasn't just stealing one person's art. He was stealing art left and right and just going in and digitally removing people's signatures and adding his own and calling it original artwork.
Right.
And it's, you know, I don't know if, I can't recall if he was trying to sell prints of it or not. Probably was. It seems like that's the sort of thing you would do. You know, it was almost a little reminiscent of this guy. I saw this documentary, and I can't remember his name or the name of the documentary at the moment, because it just crossed my mind. But there was this guy that was an accomplished copyist of classical works.
Mm-hmm.
And he had started doing it, you know, trying his hand at art, because his parents would go to all these art galleries and museums and stuff and bring all these catalogs and brochures and stuff and art auctions. And so he just started replicating these classical works, and then in his adulthood he was replicating them to the original scales, you know, whatever size, you know, researching what they were done on and everything. But he was using like colored pencils and watercolor and paints you would buy at Hobby Lobby.
Right.
And then he would go around and create this whole facade of being some benefactor who was basically donating. He never sold. What was amazing is he was this massive fraud who could not be prosecuted for that fraud, because he never tried to make a dime off of it. But he duped the curators of dozens of museums who actually took these things into their collections, and I think in some cases even displayed them. And it, you know, the Liam York struck me as being the same sort of thing, but much more dubious, you know?
Right, right.
Because it's more for complete personal gain and to...
An artist vindication, which kills me, is that's what I was talking about earlier. The idea that you're putting this up there not even so much as a way to make money. Like, maybe Thomas can speak to this, but was it at all flattering that your art got stolen?
Oh, wow.
Well, I'll tell you what. I mean, I made the joke.
So that's coming from non-artists.
Yeah.
Right. Oh, that should be great.
Well, I mean, I know that if somebody stole, you know, my podcast, I would punch him in the face. But, you know, was it like, oh, well, I mean, at least this guy recognizes good art because, you know, I'm awesome. Was there any pangs of that whatsoever?
I guess so. I mean, I joked that I knew I would have made it when people started cosplaying my artwork or stealing it.
Yeah. And that was so, two birds with one stone there.
That's right.
Yeah, I mean, Superman. I'm just waiting for the day that I'll see someone wandering around the convention floor sporting a fake beard, some kind of nerdy t-shirt, and then some kind of like plaid or Hawaiian shirt over that. Some kind of button-down, and then, you know, my curiosity will get the better of me, and they'll say, well, I'm cosplaying Jedi Kull.
Like, you, that, you super made be, it, dude. Like,
yeah, that would say that I finally arrived. But I have yet to see that be actualized.
So, I guess as we're winding down, Thomas, is there a way, can you speak to the artists that might be listening? Is there a way for people to protect themselves from this? Is there a way to kind of shield yourself from getting stuff stolen? You know, I think we're living in the midst of what would essentially be a change in the paradigm of just putting stuff out there so that people can see it. Is there a way that people can kind of back that down a little bit so that they're protected?
Well, sure. I mean, there's certain things you can do, which I kind of learned the hard way. I mean, after this experience, I used to post with higher resolution stuff. I only post low resolution now. Watermarks are always great, and then you got to just be aware of where you're posting things. So if you start seeing stuff that's going to show up, like someone told me that I had artwork on Pinterest, and I've never been on Pinterest before.
You're like, I don't make potatoes or put straw inside of old mason jars. What's the point of this?
Right. But, you know, to Pinterest's credit, everything that's mine that's on Pinterest is credited to me. So that's really nice.
That's cool.
So, I mean, those are really nice people who go and do that. I mean, they go and they tag it, and they properly credit, you know, each of the artists that they you know, are spotlighting. So it's nice that you know, there's still really nice people who, you know, when they go and share these things, they do crediting properly. And that's what really comes down to, is that you need to trust your community to make you aware of situations. But then, you know, again, low res stuff. I mean, I've even known people who post non-colored things.
Oh, really?
Do a monochrome, or maybe like half and half, where it's like, well, you know, make the thieves who want to steal harder for them to you know,
because then they have to
issue.
Go and Ted Turner it up or something.
Sure.
Ted Turner it up.
I'm going to color Gone with the Wind, and you're going to like
it. I'm going to color this half monochrome drawing in here.
Is Ted Turner here? Did I?
Sort of.
Maybe.
Maybe.
I'm not saying no.
I'm not saying no, but I'm also not saying yes.
Let me put it this way. I'd never say no to Ted Turner.
Oh my god. Alright, well, I think it's time that we start wrapping this up. Thomas, where can people find your amazing art and buy it legitimately and give you the credit that you deserve as a paragon of virtue? Second of all, has there ever been anyone as humble as Thomas? Like, nah, you know, he's probably a good guy. I didn't like bust his chops or nothing, but you know, I just ask him politely to take it down. Like, been like, where do I deliver the firebomb to? No, not Thomas. Thomas, extremely nice.
Well, the thing about that is that I've had situations where confrontation turns against you.
Sure.
Especially if you start swinging blindly, or you take too long to call bullshit out and then have it turn on you. And I've had some friends that happened to them, and they're worse off, even though they're in the right.
Yeah.
And you get to a point where you're nurturing a brand. I mean, I want to do, you know, this is a brand. I want to make t-shirts. I want to make, you know, comics. I want to make cartoons, I guess, and books and so forth. You know, being a dick does not help your brand.
Right.
Unless you're a dick brand.
Well, dick that's true. Brand. I mean, if
but
your
I,
brand
I
is dick.
You personally... in the Dick Brand business.
That's true. I mean, it's something to explore.
Well, since the late 1800s, really, there hasn't been a need for Dick Branders. Like, you can't get good Dick Branding metal anymore. It's a whole thing.
It's a lost art, basically.
It is a lost art, Dick Branding.
It's become a bit of an anachronism in this day and age, but, you know, I think it's important that we recognize that the Dick Branding was once an industry in this country and abroad.
Right. I think that Ken Burns' next documentary should probably be on the lost majesty of Dick Branders and Dick Branding, which it sounds like a guy...
was a Dick Brand.
Is it narrated by Morgan Freeman?
It should be. Dick Branding or Dick Brander. I think Dick Brander is a better name for like a guy that introduced movies. Like if it was like Masterpiece Theater. Like,
I just want to see Shelby Foote on there. It was a old Southern Dick Brand I had the occasion to meet when I was writing my latest book. Got to see some of his father's old Dick Brands. So it was quite a thrill.
Damn it. Thomas, welcome to my nightmare. It's just all the time with this.
I get to hang up after this.
That's right. Andy, however, has to do another show.
And I guarantee you, we talk about Dick Branding in the next show. You have my word as a gentleman that
We have literally branded Dick Branding.
We have. Dick Brando? Who can give me a quick Dick Brando impression?
No.
No. I don't think so.
Probably leave it at that.
All right. Well, Thomas, where can people find your work?
You can find me on Tumblr. That's where most of my stuff is. It's at branch56.tumblr.com. You can find me on Twitter at tbranch56. That's also my Instagram. And then on Facebook, you can find me at T-Branch Studios.
Well, what's funny about your Tumblr page is I was talking about having you on the show, and I was talking to a guy who's been a guest on this show and is also going to college for fine art, Jordan Wog, I bought the weird Batman drone, Jordan's, if you remember back to those episodes, and he's like, who is this guy I want to see? And I'm like, oh my God, he's the best artist ever. And like, I need a towel because I'm talking about Thomas, like for real. And he's like, there's no way. And I just hold up my phone. He's like, Jesus Christ. his exact quote was, I'm quitting school. Like, he's done. Like, you've turned this guy off to art. You're so damn good. You jackass. How dare you? How dare you be as good as you are? But yeah, Thomas, amazing. Are you going to be at any shows?
I do have a degree, though.
Well, yeah. Are you going to be at any shows coming up where people can see your art live?
Stay in school, kids.
Can you give people a code word to tell you to prove that you are you and that your art is yours at shows on our show?
I'd go with Dick Brand.
Dick
Branding?
Yeah.
Dick Branding.
Dick Branding.
There you go. Are you going to be at any shows where people can come up to you and say Dick Branding?
Absolutely. In 2 weeks, I'll be at Fan Expo Dallas, the Dallas Comic Con. I'll be actually, I know my table now, which will be A93.
Oh!
Come by, buy some stuff.
There you go. What was that again?
It's A93.
A93. There you go. So that's awesome. Cole,
Hey, A is in Amazing Artwork by Thomas Branch.
93 is in Dick Branding.
The Dick Branding Conspiracy of 1893.
The Great Dick Branding Fire.
Is the year that I graduated high school.
Oh,
nice.
I was just channeling Better Call Saul bingo nights there.
All right. Cole, why don't you plug us up with our stuff? And we're going to let Thomas go now because I'm scared for him at this point.
Yes, indeed. Our Dick Brand can be found at Jedi Cole Universe at JediCole.com. You can write to us and complain about all this tomfoolery at JCUmail@yahoo.com. You might see some Dick Branded tweets on Twitter at Jedi Cole U. And I'm just going to go ahead and jump out right here because my the founder of this show, my esteemed co-host and dear friend, has quietly in the background been working on something amazing for this site, for the home of Hey Kids Comics and Ranker Pit, Ranker Pit Live, and What'd You Think, and Do It Yourself, and all of the amazing things that have become part of this. And my work with Bobby Blakey on JCU Sunday Funnies. And we don't know exactly when just yet, but sometime this summer, when you come and visit the site, I think you're going to be very impressed, because I've seen like the skeleton of this, and I'm already, you know, I can see what this is going to look like with the flesh all over it. So exciting things are coming to this site.
We're working on it.
I have to say it's like 99.732% Andy. So I want to.
I'll take it. I guess I'll take it.
Some praise on you.
Thanks, man. I guess I'll take it. I'll take the praise. Damn it.
All right. and again, thank you to Thomas not only for being on the show tonight, but for being on the repeat of a show he thought he'd already done.
Right.
And thank you very much for coming back and spending an hour plus with us.
Absolutely, guys. Anytime.
You're awesome, man. And will you come back and join us to talk about Heritage Auction House for our last issue of this story arc?
Sure. Absolutely.
Awesome. Thank you so much, man. We appreciate it.
You got it.
All right. Well,
this awkward pause brought to you by
Dick Branding.
Dick Branding.
So thank you so much for joining us for this issue of Hey Kids Comics. Join us next week when we talk about heroes. We've been talking about a lot of villains, real-life villains, when it comes to comic books and the comic book industry for like the past 3 issues. Join us next week when we talk about heroes, people doing good things in the industry, things like the Hero Initiative, which we mentioned earlier, the Comic Book Legal Defense Fund, comic book creators who have done amazing things to give back and just spur the moment type stuff. It's time to celebrate a little bit. And then at the end of this arc, we're going to go into the craziest comic book
the story that inspired it all, so don't miss that one because it gets pretty weird.
That's right. So, as always, buy, collect, and enjoy your comic book and your comic book or art. Just take it upon yourself to police yourself. Be a little vigilant. Make sure that what you're getting is original. And support those that you love. If you love a piece of art, if you love a particular story, support those people, buy their things, give them credit online, which is something Cole and I has been pointed out recently that we're guilty of. We continue to be jackanapes and rapscallions and have taken things that aren't necessarily ours and not given credit where credit is due, which we are going to correct. We're calling ourselves on the carpet for that. Love your art and love your artists. That's all we can ask. Join us next week when we talk about some comic book heroes. Thomas Branch is a comic book hero. Thank you so much for joining us. And by the way, as we roll out of here, Cole, if people want to see Thomas and you in person live, is there a there? Thomas there.